Now, I realize it's fashionable in some circles to believe that no one in government should encourage others to read the Bible, that we're told that we'll violate the constitutional separation of church and state established by the founding fathers in the First Amendment. The First Amendment was not written to protect people and their laws from religious values. It was written to protect those values from government tyranny.
Welcome to Liberty Watch, an independent program on KVOI, Tucson's Voice of Freedom. This program is dedicated to the principle of eternal vigilance, which is necessary to maintain a free society. It promotes the free flow of information about government, technology, education, current events, and history, relying upon our steadfast Constitution to frame the informed consent of the Republic so that government forever remains servant, not master. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KVOI, its sponsors, or guests. Liberty Watch is produced and hosted by Charles Heller. Any mistakes are his responsibility.
My turn. Respected attorney and leading public advocate Michael McCray is a sought-after corporate speaker with a message about integrity, business ethics, and empowerment, and looking to change the way America does business. And he is his law degree is from Georgetown. And this is his second appearance on the program. And welcome back to Liberty Watch and on KVOI. Michael?
Hey, Charles. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So you have, on foundation, first of all, you're a whistleblower. You're a person who's been retaliated against because of what you uncovered at Acorn. Could you maybe give us a brief overview of what happened in that case?
Sure. Well, Charles, it actually goes back a little further than that.
You're welcome to take it wherever you like. I know you'll give me an intellectually honest answer.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I wound up, I'm originally from Arkansas. And I got the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. when my governor ran for president. So I tell people a funny thing happened on my way to Wall Street. I wound up working for the White House.
Something familiar, something peculiar, something for everyone. Go ahead.
You got it. Yeah. But I wound up blowing the whistle on $40 million of waste, fraud, and abuse at the in the Federal Empowerment Zones program. At that point in time, that's a program that was it was a White House initiative, the Clinton's Economic Development Initiative, and it was administered by HUD and USDA. My allegations were against the USDA and Secretary Mike Espy for essentially handpicking a grant applicant to receive a $40 million that they didn't submit a grant-worthy application. To make a long story short, you know, that decision kind of changed my life forever, and I became a federal whistleblower. Again, my background is also in law. I also have a degree in finance, MBA in finance from Howard University, and I was a former CPA. So I was I'm very stickler for the rules and regulations. And again, I was a person, I grew up, my hometown was once ranked the worst place to live in America 2 years in a row. And so when I saw $40 million being wasted, I just felt like I had to do something about it. You know, $4,000, $40,000, $40 million, somebody has to say something. And so I did. And it changed the trajectory of my life and my career. I wound up becoming a public interest advocate and working on First Amendment and whistleblower protections. During the course of that, I met other whistleblowers and other members of Acorn came to me after there was a multimillion-dollar embezzlement at Acorn. And I helped to organize them and help the resistance at Acorn. And that's the reference that you're talking about. That's also the subject of actually two books I've written now. The first was Race, Power, and Politics, Memoirs of an Acorn Whistleblower. And the second one was soon to be released, Truth, Transparency, and Accountability. And that's about the fall of Acorn. So that's kind of how I come to this honest. I am not only a whistleblower, I'm not only an advocate for whistleblowers, I am a whistleblower.
Huh. It's interesting. Double dipped, as it were. You know, if you'll get me both books, we'll do an hour on them. If you'd like to do that, we'll talk off the air, and I would gladly give an hour of this program, a whole hour of this program to that, instead of the half hour we're going to do today. You asked in your publicity pitch, quote, How much do most of us truly understand about why journalists do what they do, and why the Constitution affords for protection of free expression? Unquote. Easier for you to say than me, evidently. What is your view of what Americans understand about journalism?
Well, Charles, let me paraphrase it a little bit like this.
Okay.
A lot of times when we think of it, I love the introduction to your show. I mean, you're spot on. But when we think about the First Amendment, I don't believe a lot of Americans really understand how important it is or really appreciate it. I think the people that appreciate the First Amendment probably the most are journalists and publishers. But it is really foundational to all of the other protections and liberties that we have. And, of course, that's why the First Amendment comes first. But the work that I do kind of focuses on the relationship between sources and journalists and whistleblowers and what their impact on the First Amendment. And so the term whistleblower was probably first started being used roughly around the 1970s with, you know, Daniel Ellsberg,
Pentagon Papers. Right.
That, and I think Ralph Nader also makes a claim to it as well. But, you know, the 70s is when the term whistleblower kind of comes out. And now, you know, if you were to Google whistleblower, you're going to get, you know, if you're looking at the source, you get like 30 pejoratives that just snitch, rat, you know, all these other negative things. And it's kind of one of the things that I do in my work is I try to put whistleblowing back into its correct perspective historically. So the term whistleblower comes out in the 1970s, but the first whistleblower protection law was actually signed in 1778 by the Continental Congress. And so they viewed it as a part of everyone's civic duty to, at the earliest convenience, to report government abuse and malfeasance. And so we actually have a conference. It's called the Whistleblower Summit for Civil and Human Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. And we anchor it every day on July 30th, the week of July 30th, in celebration of the first whistleblower protection law.
And you say that first whistleblower protection was in the Continental Congress?
Continental Congress. It's July 30th, 1778.
Huh. I'll be darned. So 1778 would have been pre-Constitution.
Right.
During the Articles of Confederation time. Huh.
There you go. And when you start to read it, just like when you read the Federalist Papers, and just kind of, you know, it's one thing to read the Constitution, but when you read the legislative history and the intent, and then you start to understand why these words were chosen and why these protections are in place. And so the Founding Fathers viewed whistleblowing as part of a form of patriotism. It's our civic duty. Because, again, remember, at the time that the Constitution was being written, they were trying to stop a tyrannical government. So they wanted to ensure that there were safeguards put in place to protect that, the First Amendment being one of it, and then the right of the citizens to report on government malfeasance being another.
Huh. You know, I'm trying to stretch my memory. There was a naval officer, Samuel Shaw, I think was his name. And I believe, is that the case you're talking about with the whistleblowing, with the Revolutionary Era Congress?
I believe that's correct. And the shipmates, I think it was eight.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That story. That's the very one.
Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about that in years until
you're better than most.
Well, you know, I'm a geek. I don't do anything but sit and read about history, and I'm just on my third or fourth reread of the Federalist Papers. But when I finish this go around of the Federalist, I'm going to read the Anti-Federalist again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do nothing else. I have a boring life, but I love the minutia of, and it's not minutia, it's important things, but I love the fine details about it. So why was it that explain for the audience, if you'd be so kind, Michael, why was it that this has been important since our founding times?
Well, and I'm going to, actually, you can probably tell the story.
No, you're the guest.
Well, no. Well, what I'm saying is I do remember the story, but that's not a detailed part of my pitch. That guy is, I'm a good friend of mine who's a great whistleblower advocate, Stephen Cohen. He's the executive director of the National Whistleblower Center, and he has that story in his book. The Whistleblower's Handbook. It's in its second edition. But he tells it. He goes to great length, and he's very profound when he tells the story. And I feel bad telling it because I can't tell it like he does. But the long and short of it is you had a ship and you had the crew became aware that the captain of the admiral was doing some things that were that they felt that wasn't fair and wasn't right, and they wound up jumping overboard and going back to report to the Congress this malfeasance. They wound up getting being arrested and put into dungeon or whatnot. And, you know, when we hear the story now, most people think that, you know, well, the country's really going to come down bad on them. And what wound up happening was they decided to get these people the best lawyers at the time to afford their legal defense and to take this seriously. And that's where that first whistleblower protection law came out on July 30th. Hmm. So and that's a terrible rendition of the story, but that's what happened.
That's okay. It's a synopsis.
And the other... Yeah, and another important law that a lot of people don't really think about in terms of whistleblowing was that during Reconstruction after the Civil War,
uh-huh.
where we had a lot of the defense contractors were bilking.
Yeah, they call them carpetbaggers.
Well, you had a problem with the defense contractors basically providing the government substandard materials, defective arms, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
And then Abraham Lincoln passed what are called key TAM laws, it's the False Claims Act. And what they did was they allowed for a recovery where an individual can bring suit on behalf of the federal government against someone who is defrauding the government, and then the government recoups the money, and the whistleblower can receive a reward mm-hmm.
of up to a percentage.
25, 30%.
Right.
Right. So a lot of times when we have the term whistleblower coming up, being used in the 1970s, you know, you've had the two most important, probably the most important whistleblower acts were during the Continental Congress and after Reconstruction of the Civil War.
Hmm. Fascinating. You know, I produce another program called America's Fabric. I need to do a program on that because it connects historical things to today. And I need to do a program on that show about the original Whistleblower Act. Yeah, one thing I need to really blow a whistle about is our wonderful advertisers here on the station. So if you'll bear with us for just a little bit, we're up on our first break, our quarter of the hour break, on AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice, and the Perfection Auto Works Studios.
This is Herman Cain, and you're listening to Liberty Watch, so that government remains servant, not master.
If there was evidence of global warming, man-caused global warming, they would say it.
That's what's funny and sad all at the same time, because you have global warming alarmists and the money that they're making by doing it. Where is global cooling from the 1970s? Where's acid rain? I can tell you, the grants ran out.
Yeah, kind of like the patent on dichlorodifluoromethane.
Liberty Watch, an America armed and free. Sundays, right after Swap Shop.
Oh, intellectual freedom, shout out to us. I love you, shout out to life. Open minds of the ones who won't see. Shout the light, won't you shine the light? Intellectual freedom, I love.
And welcome back to Liberty Watch, where we're talking about intellectual freedom with Michael McCray. He's an attorney and a public interest attorney and a whistleblower and a certified whistleblower at that. And I thought that's kind of a fun update on the Elton John song, Philadelphia Freedom, Intellectual Freedom. It kind of goes really well with the interview. You were saying before we left for the break about whistleblowing in law enforcement, and we could do a whole hour on that. Do you have experience in it?
Yeah, well, Charles, I was kind of mentioning the fact that when we do the summit, the Whistleblower Summit for Civil uh-huh. and Human Rights, and you can find it at whistleblowersummit.com.
Could you do it slower for the audience? Did you say whistleblowersummit.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Whistleblower singular.
Okay.
Summit.com. And what's happened is over the last almost 10 years, whistleblowers have been meeting, convening a sometimes week-long meeting in Washington, D.C. It was originally called Washington Whistleblower Week in Washington, and that started, I think, in 2007.
Yeah, somebody on the internet probably sued him for abusing www.
Well, now, there are stories about that. there is a story about that, too. But the purpose of it originally was to create a one thing that you have to deal with as a whistleblower is the retaliation that invariably comes. And one of the greatest tools is that, you know, you got to deal with ridicule and the effects of isolation. And so we decided to start to bring whistleblowers together to create kind of a mutual support network or a community of whistleblowers, a community of activists, to kind of combat the isolation that all whistleblowers face. And it's kind of grown and grown. And so it's now the group that I work with is it's the Acorn 8, the remnants of the Acorn whistleblowers hosted. And we've hosted this in this present format for about 5 or 6 years now. But so we have a community where people come together, and then slowly but surely we start to lick our own wounds. We started that out first. It was self-help. But then we also have book signings. I encourage whistleblowers to become authors. We have people that are working on radio shows and films. And we also have different types of meetings and discussion panels. And so there is a large contingent of law enforcement whistleblowers. And one of the things that includes people from the military and then also the U.S. Marshals Service and FBI whistleblowers, as well as some local homicide detectives and whatnot. So there's a vibrant community of actual law enforcement whistleblowers who are very, very important in the current culture, because it's one thing to, when you blow the whistle and the retaliation that you face is, you know, you don't get an assignment, or, you know, they change your working conditions, or they move you to a closet. It's another thing when you blow the whistle and the retaliation is they don't answer your call for backup. I mean, when you're dealing with life and death situations.
The Serpico situation.
Absolutely. And actually, Serpico came to, I think, the second whistleblower conference in 2008 or 2009.
Huh. I reached out to him, trying to get him on the program, got no answer.
Well, he's got a new documentary out.
I did not know that. I know he lives on a farm in upstate New York, and he'd probably rather be left alone.
Well, funny you should say that. And the reason I say that is that we screened his documentary at the summit last year. And actually, it's been making, I think it was in Tribeca this year. And So I'm not sure if he's actually hitting the streets, hitting the circuit in terms of publicity behind the documentary. But if you'd said that to me, you know, 2 years ago, I would definitely have agreed with you. But I think he's actually coming out in the director, Antonio, I can't remember his last name.
We'll get it on email later, don't worry.
Yeah, but it's an excellent documentary. And it's one thing that why we chose to screen it at the summit is he captures the essence of whistleblowing and what happens to your life and the retaliation and the isolation. Now, the other interesting thing is that Serpico does not like the term whistleblower. And so there are a number of people that have taken the exact opposite focus that I've done. I've tried to reclaim whistleblower and place it in its proper terms. But there's a lot of people now that they would prefer persons of conscience. I think Serpico uses lamplighter, truth teller, you know, all these other words or whatnot to try to get away with the pejorative that's become the term whistleblower.
Interesting. I've never seen it as a pejorative, but then again, I look at isolation as blessed peace.
And it's a hard road to hoe.
No, it's blessed peace. It's time to read. I love it. You know.
There you go.
So, now I want to go back to your original. This is fascinating, and we're going to run out of time unless you want to stay longer. But and I don't know what your schedule is, and you agreed at the last minute to come on, so I get that. But you talked about in your RTIR radio television interview report pitch. You talked about you said, quote, the free press has been under assault lately with the president trying to discredit journalists and limit their access to information, unquote. This is the first time I've heard of him trying to limit access to information. What do you mean by it?
Well, it's what's happened is between as a candidate, you know, our community was very hopeful when he ran on drain the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as whistleblowers, that is a very, you know, attractive, very attractive slogan to us. And then also, one of the things, again, not trying to get into the Democrat or conservative position, but the Obama administration is actually very bad on whistleblower protections and actually whistleblower retaliation.
They also went after the press with hammer and tongue.
Well, there you go. They threatened to prosecute more whistleblowers and journalists than any prior administration. And also, you were looking at the retaliation there wasn't just you lose your job. I mean, they were going after
federal prosecutions. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, what was happening is whistleblowers and journalists were becoming political prisoners.
Right.
So we were hoping for a change from that. With the
Has there been a change?
Well, when you get to the point where you start to attack news as fake news and journalism in general, the whole First Amendment, the whole sphere gets thrown off, and so it becomes very freaking. That's essentially what I was trying to get to in terms of the RTIR pitch. Is that now when we start to talk about fake news and the deep state, and then what happens to whistleblowers, people that courageously risk everything to tell the truth? You know, there's all types of suppression and media manipulation.
Specifically, I know that some people in media did not like it when Trump publicly talked about reviewing people's broadcasting license. But he also has a First Amendment right to say whatever he wishes too, and as long as he doesn't act on it, there's nothing illegal about it. And what he's doing is, when you're fighting against Alinskyites, people who are willing to consciously lie in order to make their point. And I've had a couple people who do that here on this program. There's a guy who's a frequent guest on this station and who does exactly that, who makes claims that are just made up out of whole cloth in order to try and make his point. And when Trump calls those people to the carpet, I think what he's doing is, when somebody's trying to kick him in the knee, he instead kicks him in the nads. And rather than being, quote, presidential, and he actually, you know, is willing to fight back. And I think that's one of the reasons he got elected, is that he's willing to do stuff like that. Maybe give me the counterpositive to that, please.
Well, let me one statement that you made in there, you embedded one fact, and we start to talk about the president's First Amendment rights. Mind you, again, as American citizens, we all have First Amendment rights, First Amendment protections. But during certain jobs, you limit your First Amendment rights.
Absolutely true. But I don't know anywhere where the president has signed away. In the military, you certainly do, but I don't know where anywhere the president has done so.
Well, also try this, lawyers. I mean, if you want to talk about
curtailment of right, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can't tell the jury that they can nullify the law. You'll be held in contempt. You'll be hauled out of that court in irons if you tell the jury their true rights.
Well, try it this way. Also talk about if there's corruption in the court system. You know, lawyers have a ethical obligation to uphold confidence in the court system. So there are a number. What I'm saying is that, again, I am a champion for the First Amendment, but I do think there are certain positions and certain roles where, you know, some of your First Amendment rights aren't as free and accessible as all citizens.
I get that. There's a trade-off in public service. Right. Can I interrupt you for just a second, please? We're about to hit the bottom of the hour. Can you stay past it, or do you have to go?
We can stay a few minutes past.
Okay. Let me take the break right now, then, so we get that out of the way. And I got one caller that wants to talk to you, Sean. And then after that, you can finish making this point, because I'm sure what you're about – don't lose your train of thought. I'm sure what you're about to say is pretty important. All right. Hold on. AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice in the Perfection Auto Works Studios. And God bless the original sponsor of this program, A Handyman's Haven, for sticking with us for 18 years, and sponsors who've come on like Perfection Auto Works, who keep programs like this on the air. Folks, patronize the sponsors if you need what they sell.
Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track. Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the swap shop. Let's listen.
I have the gazebo, 10 by 10. It has the netting on the sides to keep bugs out. It's in great shape, $30.
So this way somebody doesn't have to hire a gazebologist.
Yeah, there you go. 885.
Swap shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Thank God I live in a home on the plain, the land of the free. I honor the one who gave it all. He can be free to go play.
welcome back to Liberty Watch on AM 1030 KVOI. Cortero Tucson, the voice in the Perfection Auto Works studios. We're with Michael McCray, who is a whistleblower and a whistleblower activist and attorney. And welcome back, Michael.
Thank you.
You are making a point.
Right. I think the clearest way to say it, Charles, is this. The reason that the free press is known as the fourth estate is, of course, we have a system of checks and balances with the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branch. The Constitution, the Founding Fathers saw fit to knowing that the free press was going to be an essential check on tyranny. It's essentially, that's why that's the, what's why the free press, the First Amendment exists and the free press is the fourth estate. Essentially what we have now is what you're saying is what's happening with President Trump is his attacks and assertion of fake news is acting to disconnect or to attack one of the essential checks on government. And that's where I kind of think the difference is. I mean, this is the first, if taken to its extreme, you know, once you release and people no longer respect journalism and the press in terms of its being able to critique our government, in my opinion, you're on a very slippery slope that can lead to fascism.
Can I give you the other side of the coin?
Sure.
When, in fact, that press has become, has not held truth as its highest value, it becomes part of what helps destroy the country. And that is, I think, what Trump is fighting against, plus some personal hubris that anybody who's got even 20/60 vision has to be able to see. But by the same token, what's happened is the press has become, in large part, not completely, but in large part, an Alinskyite tool to try and get people to believe things that just simply aren't true. Like, for instance, that the United States came, it was a product of racism. It wasn't. It was a product of the American dream, which was corrupted to some extent by racism and by slavery, an original sin which we have repented for in this country. The problem is people focus on the sin and they don't see the repentance.
Ooh. We need to do another.
There's another show we can do on it because you know you've experienced that firsthand, and you have a different perspective than I do, and that's, I get that. Listen, we have a caller who's been very patient. By the way, thank you for not saying what you were just thinking. We had to bleep it. All right. Let's see. Let's go to this button over here and that button over there. And, Sean, you're live on Liberty Watch with Michael McCray.
Michael, thank you so much. And, Charles, thank you for having him on. I always say critical examination of our government is the highest calling of any responsible citizen. And, Michael, thank you for what you do.
Thank you, sir.
And this product, this collection of states, Charles, is a product of spiritual faith.
Yeah.
There's no other way we can put this together other than it's a product of spiritual faith. Michael, you have basically put yourself in a place that you become one of the founders. When you take on the crown, you basically put your life, liberty, and sacred honor on the line, and basically I say life, and what we saw in South Phoenix, when anybody takes on the system, they actually risk their life. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, that's one of the reasons that we started meeting to convene in Washington was that, you know, we're dealing with people whose lives have been shattered and destroyed, and the first thing we had to do was to create some unity and to create a sense of community. So now you're 100% right on that.
South Phoenix? What happened in South Phoenix, briefly?
Oh, briefly, when it was probably 13 years ago, a young Phoenix police officer went to internal affairs and tried to make a change up there, Charles, and I don't know if you remember the story, and I almost thought you talked about it.
I may have, but...
When the guy was, he was found in, it was over about 43rd and Broadway, with his arms crossed, his shotgun on his chest, suffered from a shotgun wound, it's almost called the Ben Foster syndrome.
Oh.
They investigated it for about 13 seconds and just gave up on
it. Because,
I mean, this is what happens. And Michael, God bless you, young man. Thank you so much. I told Charles off the air.
Do you have a quick question for him?
I hate to do this. Thank you so much.
Got it. Sean, we appreciate your appreciation, but do you have a question for Michael?
No, I mean, how do you come to this spiritual faith, Michael, where you can actually put your life on the line?
All right. Good question. Michael. Michael?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's thank you, Sean, for those comments and the respect. It's why do people blow the whistle is essentially, I think, what the question really gets to. And it's interesting. A lot of it comes from a matter of just kind of personal faith and upbringing. There have been studies, and there was a researcher from University of Virginia or Virginia Tech that did this long longitudinal study on whistleblowers. She interviewed like 400 whistleblowers. And essentially what the results were is that there's some people that are brought up with a strong moral code, and it's faith which causes people to just try to see a wrong and to right it. But then also it comes from the fact that now we have a more educated society, and more people go to graduate school and professional schools. And what's happened is there's a lot of business ethics that are being taught. And so you're either raised with it, you learn it in school, and then somehow or another you find up in the real world, you become faced with a crisis where something that you're taught that you're not supposed to do, someone is doing. And in the moment, it's a critical time. And oftentimes, most people, you don't grow up and say, I want to be a whistleblower. In general, what happens is all you have to do is say the wrong thing at the wrong time, and you start this sequence of events that ultimately may wind up having you file papers really in defense of the retaliation that you're going to get from management. In a lot of ways, bad managers create whistleblowers.
You know, I'll give you the other side of the coin, too. Many cultures corrupt people out of whistleblowing, and of course the catchphrase of that is, as I'm sure you know, is, well, you got to go along to get along.
There you go.
What happens, and I'm from Chicago, and one of the reasons I left it was that basically I'm a refugee for the right to keep and bear arms. I don't believe that a government that says you can't exercise your rights is entitled to any tax money, so I voted with my feet. But the system in Chicago was, if you're white and you're a person of substance and you get caught with a gun, the gun just disappears and you don't get charged for it. That's the way that works. And I got to tell you that it's a corrupt system. So the people who would most benefit from being armed, which are the people in lower socioeconomic classes, who are the victims more often than the folks of means, they're the ones who are most prosecuted for attempting to exercise their rights. That's a corrupt system. And you can blow all the whistles you want until recently, till the last 6 or 7 years when that was changed through court process, not through democratic process. Basically civil rights legislation to allow people to exercise their Second Amendment right. That's the only way you were ever going to achieve your rights. And one guy cannot fight that system.
Well, you got a number of guys who are trying.
Well, yeah. But usually they have bad precedents named after them in court. Luckily, there are some good ones. There's a wonderful decision by the name of Heller. It's not me. I wish it was, but it's not me. And several others. Another one named McDonald after the courageous Otis McDonald in Chicago. And one person does not go against the machine. Not if he expects to survive. So, all right.
Well,
go ahead.
To give you one of my, I'm not sure if this is a Linsky, if this is directly a Linsky, but one of the things I did learn from Acorn is, while you can't fight City Hall, you can fight the mayor.
Well, the truth is, you can fight City Hall, but you don't do it alone. You you do it through YouTube. You do it through you form alliances. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Goldwater, the Goldwater Institute. What you do is you have a nonprofit organization, a nonprofit legal organization, a public interest law firm, establish and use law that wraps the government around its own axle. It stuffs its tailpipe, as I like to say, down its own carburetor. Or intake, you have to say anymore. But the point of the matter is you make the government perform to its own standard. You force them to do that through legal process. That's how you fight this.
And Charles, another show that we need to do is judicial reform and legal whistleblowing. That's another.
We're up to five. Is it five or six now? I'm going to have to listen to this entire tape and make a list, or entire recording and make a list. Okay, we're coming to the end of the line here. If you want to make a final point, you got 60 seconds, and please give your website or any website you want this audience to use.
Okay, absolutely. If you want to find me, you can find me at michaelmcrae.net. Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. MCCRAY.net. That's my personal website. You can find me there for speaking engagements or other bookings. The Whistleblower Summit website, again, is whistleblowersummit.com, and that's the largest, most prestigious whistleblower conference on Capitol Hill, and it happens every summer during the week of July 30th. And also, if you want information about the Acorn situation and the Acorn 8, you can go to acorn8.com. Again, acorn8.com. And that's where you'll find out about the courageous whistleblowers within Acorn. And you can also read either of my books. The one that's out now is Race, Power, and Politics, Memoirs of an Acorn Whistleblower, which is available in bookstores or via Amazon.com. And the soon-to-be-released book, sequel to that, to Race, Power, and Politics, is Truth, Transparency, and Accountability. And that's about the fall of Acorn, which will also be available on Amazon.com and anywhere books are sold.
I don't know. The fall of Acorn sounds most like it should come out in September or October, you know? Never mind.
We were shooting for around July. Really, I like to use – I wanted to go with the conference date. But you know how publishers and editors and publicity people.
I know about the publicity people, some of whom even bother occasionally to tell the guest the host's name when they can be troubled to do it. I'm spring-loaded to the PO'd position rather permanently about the publicity industry.
Eight.
Yeah. And when that, by the way, the Acorn 8, is that Acorn and the number 8 or Acorn E-I-G-H-T?
Acorn and the number 8.
Acorn number 8. Okay.
Number 8.
All right. You have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Charles.
You're welcome.
The tow truck is an institution almost as old as the automobile itself. Originally consisting of a tiltable A-frame bolted to the bed of a pickup truck, a winch, and a sling to hold up the front of the towed car off the ground. Today, tow trucks are usually flatbed trucks with a winch to grab your car onto the tilting bed. We call those the son of a winch. At Perfection Auto Works, our goal is to keep your car running right so that you never have to experience deliverance via a tow truck. Brakes, tires, oil changes, major service, and restorations of all cars, foreign or domestic. Since 1994, we've been wrenching your car, not your wallet. See us now or see the son of a winch later. Your choice. Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650. That's 323-8650 or perfectionautoworks.com.
Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Hi, Barb. You're live on the Swap Shop.
I have a Sears Kenmore wine cooler for $175, and it holds 25 bottles.
That could be a party.
That sure can be. And my number is 520.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening to Liberty Watch with Charles Heller, Tucson, Arizona.
Cruise, what you want? Cruise, baby, I had it. Cruise, what you need? Cruise, ain't forgotten. Cruise, all I wanted. Cruise, was to be present when you get home.
Get used to it.
Hey, baby,
get
when
to
you
it.
Get home.
Just get used to it. Just get used to it.
Just a little bit from former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton there. I wanted to bring in some more unusual and parody-like bumper music, so I've been on a quest to do that. Folks, if you want to pitch in on that and you hear a song, a fun parody or something like that, as long as it doesn't have too much profanity that I can't either edit out or bleep over, I'm happy to entertain it at charles@libertywatchradio.com. Again, charles@libertywatchradio.com. And you can find me on Twitter at, this is two at LibertyWatchUSA.com. Again, at LibertyWatchUSA.com. I don't use the Twitter account very much. I'm going to start at least tweeting out the URLs for the excellent guests interviews that we have on this program and for some of the excellent guests. And if you'd like to sign up, you can follow me at LibertyWatchUSA.com. Don't look at the Twitter feed that much myself, but there are a few other people I do follow and occasionally get good show leads. Boy, did I get a good one from Masad Ayoub on one of his, on his blog about somebody that, last one he gave me, it was Stephen Hunter. And those of you who heard that interview know how good it was. I think that was a 2 hour or maybe a 90 minute interview with author Stephen Hunter about his book G-Men. I actually repeated it, one of the very, very rare repeats, probably about 10 repeats in 18 years that I've done, where I've done a best of show on, I think either Christmas or, I think it was Christmas that I repeated that, and it was a very good interview. So I've gotten some really good leads from people, and if you have any, Brian, you know who you are, and also Pete, you know who you are. You send me some really good leads for bookings, and Richard F. as well. You know who you guys all are. So thank you for those. If you have any bumper music suggestions, email them to me, and I'm happy to do them as long as they're fairly polite. And that guy, Michael McCrae, was Michael McCrae, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, McCrae, M-C-C-R-A-Y, .net, if you want to find out more information. It looks like I got about 5 shows to do with the guy, and he'll probably come up with 5 more ideas and suggestions each time I do it. He's a real lit candle. I really appreciate guests like that. I found him on Radio Television Interview Report, Sean. Sean Madley dives for a pen. I want to tell you some of the things that you can do that I want to, some of the things I've said before over the years, but some of the things I want to reiterate, some of this may be new. These are things you can do individually to help freedom. One thing you can do, of course, is be an informed citizen. Another thing you can do is be familiar with the Federalist Papers and understanding the base arguments on which this country and its Constitution by its framers were founded. The principles on which we run our government. Because, and the other thing is ally with other people who have your same basic understandings, your same basic bent towards liberty. Ally, support organizations that do great work. For instance, Goldwater Institute. There's one in Chicago called, it'll come to me in a minute. There's one in Kentucky called the Bluegrass Foundation. There's a number of state level think tank organizations like Goldwater around the country. And if you go on Goldwater's site, goldwaterinstitute.org, you will find links to allied types of websites and organizations, Heritage Foundation and such. Heritage has a program. Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works is doing a really neat thing. He's getting 1,000 copies of the Citizens Rulebook, and he's placing them at businesses who will freely distribute the Constitution. That is an amazing act of patriotism. That's something one person can do to help the country maintain liberty. Great idea. Great idea. Ally yourself with other people who are similarly minded and try not to fight against the system individually. Do it corporately. By corporately, I don't mean form a corporation, although that is another thing you can do. But ally with a nonprofit who doesn't have a stake in making money doing a thing, but in changing a political result. That's one of the things that certain nonprofits do, is that instead of giving money to a key individual or an owner of an organization, that money goes to fund the cause. Join a cause that is something you believe in, be it Goldwater Institute at goldwaterinstitute.org, or if it's, but you pick a topic that's about which you have a passion. For me, of course, it's going to be right to keep and bear arms issues, but as just as much the freedom issues as the ballistic issues, just as much the issues of other constitutional import, especially the First Amendment. Join up with organizations that fight in your area of interest. You do not have to carry an entire burden on your shoulders. What you can do is be part of the operation of making those goals a success. I got to tell you what activism is. Activism is not making, is not necessarily, not all activism is tearing down the Berlin Wall, okay? Activism really looks like is showing up. Activism looks sometimes like making phone calls. Hang on, Sean, I'll be right with you. Activism looks like financially, maybe you don't have the time to go out and be an activist. But if you're successful in business, you can support causes which actually do go out and do the work of freedom. So, Sean, go ahead.
I just want to say thanks, Charles.
You're welcome.
Sometimes me and you, you bring my name up, and I think it was Rick or something. You know, we are brothers in this fight, Charles.
Yeah, we are. We come
we're
at it from
sibling rivalries. We come at a different point of view.
That's fine.
You know what you said is absolutely right. Each and every citizen. You don't just have a right, you kind of got a duty, guys.
Yeah, you got a responsibility to try and make the place better. That's why forever I'm yelling at you. I'm going to take permission to take our small feud public.
No, go ahead, dude.
I'm frequently yelling at you,
Charles.
I'm frequently yelling at you to take your position because you have a position in the media that is rare. You and I have it, and other people have it who have shows like we do. We have an ability not only to take things before the public and convince the public through positive encouragement and not too much nagging that makes them change the channel, okay, through positive encouragement to A, motivate people, and B, you and I have the ability to use our position in media to get people in government to listen. I know you think most government is not valid, and that's a great philosophical argument, but it doesn't change the fact that government exists. And the way that you increase freedom, you know, what Dennis Prager says, the larger the government, the smaller the citizen.
You are correct.
And so what I try to do is I try to deal with the reality that's here. And the reality is here is, you know, anarchy, despite the fact that it's wonderful as far as freedom is concerned, anarchy is not going to sell to the general populace. And neither is any law which is contrary to the public will. I give you, for example, prohibition. Prohibition didn't work because the people didn't want it. And eventually, when they tried prosecutions, juries would nullify the law. And eventually, that's why they repealed prohibition. And you've got to work in that way. You kind of have to work. You don't have to work completely within the system, but you have to work at least at the edges of the system to drive the public consciousness towards the result of liberty. Because if you don't do that, what's going to happen is there won't be popular support for things you do. That's why Jeff Sessions is going to fail on coming down on recreational marijuana. The point of the matter is that's too much government. I despise intoxication. I don't mind the idea of a drink occasionally, but the idea that you have to do this, a person has to do this to change one's consciousness, to me is sickening. To want to be inebriated. It's an attempt to escape reality, which could be better done in other ways. I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. I'm just saying, to me, that's how I view it. But at the same time, a government that's strong enough to control people's use of marijuana is strong enough to kick any door down for any reason. I don't want that level of government.
I don't either, Charles, and I'm one of these guys. I mean, I'm one of the few people probably in America right now that is pro-life from conception.
Right.
And with a 7-2 decision in the Supreme Court, which we've actually authorized, the citizenry have actually authorized the Supreme Court to tell us anytime, anywhere, you can kill a soul.
Right.
I got a problem with that.
I do too, but here's how we work on it.
We won't work on
no,
it,
no,
Charles,
no.
And you know that.
No, no.
We can work on it spiritually,
but not on
the government.
No, we can work on it. Well, yeah, not on the government side. The Supreme Court's already taken that out. But what we can do is we can make it an aberrant activity through, say, YouTube. We can actually show what abortions do if YouTube won't squelch it. We can show what abortions do to a living human being. And by doing that, we can shame people out of doing shame doctors out of abortions. I'll tell you another thing that would I'll tell you another thing that would win, Sean, and that is we need to start insurance companies who will only insure doctors who don't do abortions and make that insurance cheaper than other insurance. And you can drive doctors out of the abortion business through economics, or not all of them, but you can reduce the number of doctors who will do abortions. You can limit the supply of doctors in the supply chain by making it economically to the advantage of doctors to not do abortions. And that's a way we could reduce it. Will we ever eliminate it? No. But we could certainly reduce the number, and we could do it through positive incentive rather than the Christians who think that you're someday going to get the Supreme Court to overrule itself are fantasizing.
I agree.
Okay, so what else could we do instead? All right, Sean, I've reached the end of the hour.
Instill spiritual faith in our brothers and sisters.
I agree.
That's all I 100% ask. Instill what brought this country about is spiritual faith. Charles, and I do appreciate. Thank you so much, man.
You're welcome.
That was a great show, and I appreciate
my
you
pleasure.
Putting up with my crazy ass.
You're not so hard to put up with. All right.
Appreciate it, guys.
Have a great day. All right. God bless you. And AM 1030, KVOI, Cuartero, Tucson, The Voice in the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Whoever just texted me, I'll look at it in a minute. But I'm not going to lose the bubble on playing the Open to America Armed and Free on AM 1030, KVOI, Cuartero, Tucson, The Voice.